Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about the movies that don't get talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on this episode, we will be taking a look at the 1983 Martin Scorsese film, The King of Comedy, and how it influenced Todd Phillips' 2019 Joker film. We've also got some movie news to read through and a couple sweet recommendations for you. But first, let me introduce the most super rat catcher I know, Jason Thompson. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Any day you get to go and see a movie with your old buddy is a good day.
That's very true. I could not agree more. So I'd like to first just take a moment to apologize if this episode sounds weird, because we are recording on my phone in a hotel room, because I don't want to haul my desktop computer around. So, there we go.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Where'd you get the rat catcher thing from? Why'd that happen? That's a terrible joke.
It's
Is that
really
the terrible joke that you normally get made fun of?
Yeah, that's one of them. That's okay. It's from Joker, because of the super rats.
And supposedly the super villain.
Yeah, the super rat catcher.
Yeah. He's gonna be in Suicide Squad.
It's fucking stupid.
Can you believe that he's gonna be in Suicide Squad? I hope they kill him off right away.
I hope. Oh, like Slipknot.
Yeah.
The last one.
You know, that guy that they were finally
the
giving
guy that
Native
can climb anything.
The guy they're finally giving Native Americans a voice in big cinema.
The very first thing that he does is let Captain Boomerang convince him to test out the explosives in their neck, and immediately dies.
Yup. Thank you, Native Americans.
You know, my biggest issue with that movie is that they ruined the one thing that I thought was really funny. That I genuinely thought was funny. Like, the one thing that I like in that movie is the moment when, I don't remember. The guy is like, alright, I turned the explosive thing off, you guys can all leave. And Captain Boomerang grabs all the beer in the bar that they're at and just runs out the door. And the one thing that makes me upset is that at the end he comes back for the big fight. And I just wish that, like, he had never come back. Like,
yeah.
that the movie would have ended with them, like, finding him and arresting him and dragging him back into the...
That was kind of a cop-out, because, yeah, that would have been way better. He just had him disappear with the booze.
If he just never came back.
It would have been in character, too.
That would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Whatever. Suicide Squad 2. Maybe it'll, not be as bad.
Hopefully,
it's a pretty low bar to set, but...
It is. So I told you I was going to surprise you with something.
Yeah, what is it? What
do you got? Well, so I'm really, really thankful that you're having me on here, obviously. I have never listened to a single podcast of anything.
And now you're on one.
Yes, and I want to see what they're like. And I'm sorry I haven't listened to one before. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I haven't had my license since I haven't been driving around listening to stuff, so... I will,
That makes sense.
I would love to start listening to more.
Well, now you're going to experience one firsthand.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Very exciting.
There's another surprise coming, too, but you carry on. Let's see
you're pregnant.
Format. Huh?
I said you're pregnant.
You didn't. Shut up.
All right. So we are going to... We're going to start out... I'm gonna start out and just say the worst thing that I saw this week, which was Predator 2, which is a movie that I have not seen since I was like 12, and I saw that it was free. I heard somebody talk about it and be like, you know what, it's not as bad as I remember it, and I was like, maybe I'll like it, and I saw it on a thing, and so I clicked on it and I watched it, and it was worse than I remembered. It somehow because it's the first one. I mean, it feels like it's a solid setup for a sequel, and then they just do every wrong thing that you can possibly do.
I guess I can't judge you for watching that, because I think it's on par with my bad thing that I watched this week.
Right.
But that one's pretty bad.
Dude, it's really rough. I had a hard time making it. I almost fell asleep like 5 times. I had a really hard time making it through. And it kind of made me more upset because I feel like they actually do some interesting things with the Predator character. Like when they give, at the end of the movie, when they give Danny Glover the, like the old gun as a, like, good job, you killed. Mm-hmm. He survived the hunt. Yeah. Like, that sort of thing is kind of interesting, and well, then...
the premise of having him in the city is great, too.
Yeah.
Just during, that, during the whole idea. War? Yeah, that's, I think that they squandered a really good idea, the setup, you know.
It felt like I was watching a cartoon. Like, everything is just so over the top, and so fucking stupid, and...
Well, it looks like the 90s direct-to-video craze where you take, you know, it was the beginning of, you know, this is a great franchise, let's just make a buck off it kind of thing.
Yep.
You know, which is, can I tell you mine?
Yeah, go ahead, let's hear it.
Yeah, so mine was Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday. And the reason it is titled Jason Goes to Hell, by the way, is the new studio, New Line, did not have rights to the title Friday the 13th.
Really?
They did not. And so they still wanted to make one. And
that was
the... Oh, my God. And there's worms that come out of his mouth. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
It's terrible. I've seen Jason X, which is pretty bad.
But that's actually entertaining. This one didn't have the entertaining factor. Like, it was... Yeah, it was bad. It took me a few days to watch that one.
What did you watch it on?
That's streaming right now on Amazon Prime for all of our listeners who'd like to check that out.
So many of them. I bet they're rushing to it right now.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. I know. I did all the other Friday the 13th this last spring, and I finally saw that one at the library, and it was like, why not?
Great.
Yeah. All right. So there we go.
Well, that's exciting.
Yo.
That's an interesting tidbit. The best thing that I saw this week was I finally got to finish watching Hustlers, which was pretty good. I really liked it. I did not think I was going to enjoy it at all, and I was pretty surprised because I'm not a fan of J-Lo for the most part, although I think she usually tries in most of the movies that she's in. I just don't think she's that good of an actress, and she was actually pretty good in this.
No, it's pretty good. Is that Oscar worthy? Like everything I've been hearing, this whole, or is that just a bunch of hype being put out there by the news outlets?
I'm not sure because, and we kind of talked about this earlier. Like we talked about Christian Bale being in the nominations for Best Actor at the Oscars this last year. And we talked about how, like, Christian Bale in Vice was really good, but, like, it wasn't any better than what performance he normally turns in. And so, if we were to judge it based on that, like, I do think she deserves a bunch of acclaim and awards, or at least nominations, just because I think that it's, like, such a higher level than from where she's normally operating at.
See, and I didn't like that comparison by, because then you're not comparing them by the field, you're comparing them by their own work, mm-hmm. You know, and if you're like, say, Leonardo DiCaprio or whatnot, or based on his body of work,
yeah,
it's like, how do you grade this one better than...
How much he yells.
No, that's Pacino. I'm sorry. No.
Tom Cruise is how much he runs.
That's... Now, dude, I saw something on that. There was a video edit with all of him running. It was all of like 30 minutes or something. I swear to God. They watched the whole thing.
That's awesome.
Would have been the best thing.
Well, that's the argument that I've heard of why the mummy's not very good, is because he doesn't run in it.
Interesting. I've seen these arguments before. All the movies that actually show Brad Pitt eating have really high, like are reviewed really well. And all the movies that actually don't show him eating are reviewed lower than the ones that show him. He's a constant snacker. I'm not even making that up.
Did he eat in Ad Astra? I'm gonna have to watch for this now every time I watch a movie with him in it.
I totally meant to, too. I know. Yeah, it does show him eating.
Does it?
Not casually munching, though.
Yeah.
But yes.
It shows him do that in Killing Him Softly.
Yeah, and that wasn't that good, was it?
Which is a movie that I didn't like it the first time, but I watched it again, and it's really grown on me.
Who directed that again?
I don't remember.
He was coming up, because I remember being pumped for the movie, and then just kind of... Maybe I need to watch it again.
Oh, and speaking of Killing Him Softly, I've kind of been comparing, like, in my head, Hustlers to Killing Him Softly.
Strange.
It is strange, but the reason why is because I feel like Killing Him Softly is kind of like a dude's movie. You know what I mean? Like, there's, like, a lot of gangster shit, and, I mean, it's got James Gandolfini playing a gangster, and it's got, Brad Pitt playing a hitman, and, you know, it's just got a bunch of guys playing criminals.
Ray Liotta, playing a
gangster. Like, it's just got a lot of, like, things that you expect from, like, dude movies.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's also got this really interesting, commentary on capitalism and where our country is economically. So it's got all that going on. And then Hustlers is kind of like, I don't know, like it's kind of like a girl power movie, right? Like it's all about women and they're kind of like, you know, taking money from these dudes. And although it doesn't have like, it kind of does have a lot of strong female celebrities in it, because Cardi B's in it, Lizzo is in it, and then it's also making a strong statement about like the economic situation of today, and about capitalism and the 2008 economic collapse, which is also a very heavy topic in Killing Him Softly. And that's why,
so it's kind of like a good way to hide a subversive message, like within something that's just
genre stuff.
Genre enjoyable, which is cool.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Andrew Dominik, by the way, directed Killing Him Softly. He did Assassination of Jesse James.
Oh, that's right.
That's why I was so pumped, because he was on the up and coming.
Yeah, and that movie is really fucking good.
We can curse on here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, dude, it's going to be way fucking easier.
No racial slurs, but you can curse all you want.
Racial slurs, dude. Come on, I'm not going to... I'm not that guy, everybody. All right. Jesus. Scoot McNary? Sorry.
But yeah, no, Hustlers is a really... It's a really baller movie, you know? There's lots of really sweet dance numbers in it. Usher's in it. Oh my god. All right, I'm going to stop talking. I'm not going to stop talking because... So last time we did this episode, or we talked about this, Caitlin came on the show and shared a story about how somebody got a hand job right next to us and we had to leave early. And that's why we didn't get to finish watching the movie. So I went back this week to watch it, only to discover that somebody behind me was getting a blowjob.
You need a theater, buddy.
Wondering how I discovered that, it's because... there was this really heavy dance number, you know, like club scene, and then the movie is told from Constance Wu's perspective, or her character's perspective, in the present, and she's being interviewed and just kind of like sharing the story. And so whenever it cuts to her telling the story, it's really quiet, so there's like this really heavy club sound. And then it cuts to her, and she's talking, but all I could hear, like behind me, was... It's just really upsetting. And so yeah, and then I looked, and then I put my seat down to stand up and look behind me, and they were the two people behind me were like scrambling to get into their seats. So I guess my question to you, sir, is what's the worst movie to find out that somebody in the theater is getting a blowjob to?
Wow, it definitely wouldn't be that, because I mean, you got strip club scenes, you know, so, and I don't know. I don't think that one's too out of place.
I would say that my answer is going to be the It remake.
It remake?
Or re-adaptation.
That's funny because the best thing I saw this week was It Chapter 2, and we were sitting in the back seats, and there's only a few other people in the group. And anyway, I got close. Got close, but didn't quite get to that.
Real quick, I just want to share that, unless she wants to share her answer, Caitlin has passed me a note saying that her answer is the beginning of Up.
Yeah. Holy shit. No way. That's bad. What about during the final scene of Toy Story 3 or something?
Ooh, Zootopia. That would be one. Jesus Very Christ. Upsetting.
Or if you were one of the lucky people who saw teeth in theaters anywhere, you know, having sex or anything arousing. Anything like that would just be bad.
I remember when you saw that movie and I saw you.
Oh my god.
Like a week or so later, and I asked you how it was, and you said it scared you so bad you didn't have sex for a week.
Yeah.
That was your review.
Yeah. It didn't help that I wasn't, you know, I probably couldn't be getting laid at the time or anything like that. But yeah, no, that movie was. I'm having like flashbacks right now to certain scenes and things coming off of people, and no, that movie. Jess Wexler, man, whatever happened to her? Because I thought she was going to be big. She was like the Micah Monroe of that time period. I thought she was going to be...
Speaking of weird horror movies, what about Rubber? Wouldn't that be a weird one?
That's a good movie.
Just find out somebody's...
Well, it's so quiet, too. There's so many just, like, what do you call those things? Tumbleweeds just rolling by, and all you hear is... Jesus, man. Choose a different flick. Or Don't Breathe, if someone decided to, like, in the middle of Don't Breathe, to just start going at it.
What about The Witch? The ending of The Witch.
Oh my god. That's a brutal one.
Do you want the taste of butter in your mouth?
Oh my lord.
Alright, we gotta stop talking. We gotta stop talking about this. So, It Chapter 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it. I did. It was okay. I don't know, it was a movie.
That's how I described it. It was okay.
It was a movie, but one thing that bothered me, definitely coming from Baxter, Minnesota, mm-hmm. the home of Paul Bunyan, was the terrible Paul Bunyan scene coming after Bill Hader. And I didn't think about it until later, but really, how the hell are you supposed to be afraid during these scenes when the adults are being chased down by it? And you know damn well that at the last second, it, or the creature, or whatever shape he's taking, is going to stop. And it takes away any semblance of fear. And also, what the hell are the rules with it, the creature, Pennywise? Like, when does he choose to actually kill people, and when does he choose not to? It was stupid. He could have just destroyed that whole fucking town.
I feel like they're a little more clear cut in the first one, but like the how he operates. But yeah, in the second one, he's very all over the place.
Very much so. That said, Bill Hader was absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
and I would watch it again just to see him again because yeah, he was great.
He was really good.
I was kind of surprised James McAvoy was a little bit more under the radar, on that one. He was a little bit not a standout, which is okay.
As a fan of the book, I was really disappointed that there was no giant turtle god at the end of the movie. But
what are you gonna do?
Yeah,
you know, you can't throw big turtle gods in every movie.
I watched it with Caitlin and our friend Hannah, and I kept whispering to Caitlin, "When is the turtle going to show up?" And she kept saying, "What are you talking about?"
Right. Nobody knows unless they've read the book or read that there should have been a turtle. Now, you know what I am impressed they included was the Adrian killing that opened the film.
Oh yeah,
I was impressed that they had the balls to do that because that was good. That really set the stage that Derry is just kind of a scary town in and of itself, mm-hmm. in its old style ways. Like, I like that. Like, obviously I didn't like the killing itself. It was brutal, but I think it set the tone for the movie pretty well.
No, agreed. There's something else that had to do with it that I was going to mention.
And Jessica Chastain in a scene that had used more gallons of blood than any other scene filmed in the history of time.
No, I was going to say that my big bummer in that movie is I'm a huge fan of, like, my favorite character from the book is Ben. And I felt really let down by it was Ziggy, right, from The Wire? No, that was the other guy. That was Eddie. Yeah, I don't remember who played Ben, but
he used to be.
I was also bummed because his character in the first movie was really good. Like, that kid did a good job, and then
he did. The kid did a great job as Ben. Yeah. I was really impressed with him. Actually,
Ben Hanscom.
The actor who played him in as an adult was Jay Ryan.
Yeah.
Who hasn't really been in too much else worth noting, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I was bummed that they didn't get somebody else. Yeah. I was also kind of bummed. I don't know. We can talk about this for hours.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's get into The King of Comedy and Joker. What I thought we'd start with is, for those of you who have not heard, Joker is very heavily influenced by The King of Comedy. to the point where I agree with what you... Well, I don't know. Do you just want to share what you said? I got done with the movie.
One of the shots being a complete recreation?
Yeah.
I thought it was great when they put it, though. Like,
no, yeah, it was good. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like they straight up lifted just plot points from that movie and put them into Joker, which is fine, but I don't know. So, The King of Comedy is a 1983 movie that was made by Martin Scorsese. It's one of his less successful films. Do you know how much it made in theaters?
I do not remember, please tell
me. Do you have a guess? So the budget was $18 million.
I want to say it was like 2.3.
Yeah, 2.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made 2.5 million. And it wasn't super well received by critics until like it had time to age. And I think a lot of people just, like, for whatever reason, didn't think that this was a world that we would live in someday. And now the world that he's created is very, very real.
Well, I think one of the big things that turned people's ideas around, or when it happened, was when, because doesn't Robert De Niro runs the Tribeca Film Festival, and they got restored a copy of King of Comedy, and it played. It was the closing ceremony or closing movie, and I think it had like a standing ovation, didn't it, or something? Sorry,
that sounds familiar. Yeah. So the King of Comedy stars Robert De Niro as funny Travis Bickle. as a guy named Rupert Pupkin, I believe is his name.
Rupert Pupkin. Often misspelled, often mispronounced.
Yeah.
He says multiple times in the film.
I want to call him Pupkin or Pumpkin.
As the receptionist calls him.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
And then it also... So, Rupert Pupkin is a not successful comedian who has never really tried to be a comedian, who is very obsessed with a talk show host. Is this starting to sound familiar to anybody who's watched Joker yet? Anyway, he's very obsessed with a talk show host who is played by, oh my god, what's his name?
Jerry Lewis?
Yes, Jerry Lewis. And his character's name is like Jerry Crawford? Or
Jerry Langford.
Jerry Langford, that's what it was. I knew it was something really close to his real name. So, Jerry Langford, who runs this talk show, and Rupert Pupkin.
Such a good name.
Saves him from some fans. Right,
Sandra Bernhardt, and specifically a loose rabid fan in his
who
gets in his car.
Who's another one that's very obsessed with Jerry Langford, and
Jerry Langford gives Rupert a compliment and tells him that he'll have him on a show sometime, which I think for the most part he's just kind of trying to be a nice guy.
Gives him, he wants to hear his material, says maybe down the line.
Yep. And then Rupert just starts having these elaborate fantasies, thinks they're best friends, and gets to the point where he kidnaps Jerry Langford and hands him over to, what was her name, Sandra
Bernhard, and yeah. They actually concoct the plan together to kidnap him after he gets shot down showing up at his weekend.
Yeah,
his weekend, right. Golfing house with his girlfriend, whom he is also obsessed with and actually doesn't like him at all.
Yeah.
Seems like a theme in his life, possibly. Mentally unstable? I don't know. Could be.
And so he... they kidnap Jerry Langford and the... oh my God, why can't I remember? Sandra Bernhard?
Yeah,
Sandra Bernhard. Takes Jerry on her, like, just dream getaway date vacation thing, while Rupert Pupkin tells the studio that he'll let him go as long as he can do a comedy set as the first opener, which he does, and then he gets arrested and spends time in prison. And
better to be king for a night than a...
than live a lifetime as a schmuck. Yes, right?
I believe so.
And then it ends with him getting all these offers and stuff. However, this is also very similar to many sequences in the film where he is experiencing either delusion or just imagining shit.
Now the one thing, and I'll say about that though, is the in the rest of the film when he is they're clear delusions, the style of film is different.
Mm-hmm.
It looks more of a tape VHS recording.
Yep.
Now the final book offer stuff that could be totally, I see it personally as totally legit and even more of a commentary on our society that we would be throwing fame and fortune at this type of sick individual and basically profiting off of his illness and making him into something more.
And to take that a step further, one of the things that they clearly state is that he and Jerry Langford are still friends, which totally seems like a thing that would happen in this day and age.
Yes.
That a celebrity would befriend their kidnapper because they're famous.
Or befriend just as much as some of these people date,
befriend. Take some, Twitter, Instagram photos.
My PR guy meets your PR guy. Hey, let's...
yeah. Let's hash this out real quick.
Yeah, my guy will date your guy for 10 Gs.
All right, so that is The King of Comedy. Now, Joker stars Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know. You want to take this one?
I just want to say one thing before you carry on with the stars.
Yeah.
There are other people in this movie, most certainly, but Joaquin Phoenix is in every single scene, and there is not a single scene in this movie that he isn't the sole focus on.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tour de force, and this is the Joaquin Phoenix show.
Yeah. Yep.
100%. Absolutely.
So, it's... I don't know. So much... I feel like so much happens in this movie, but that's probably just because I just saw it, like a couple hours ago. So, what?
Well, I told you I had two things I wanted to tell you.
All right.
Sorry. So Thursday night, I had the chance to see Joker.
Okay.
So I've seen it twice.
Okay.
I didn't want to ruin it for you.
No, it's okay.
And I wanted to keep up.
You haven't broken my heart.
I didn't know if I was going to be hospital because of my infected leg. My leg's infected, everybody. But I also wanted to make sure. I wanted to make sure that I don't know. You do so good with your movies.
No, I gotcha.
Now I'm on the same page as you.
I understand. No worries. All right. So what?
Nothing.
Just gotta cover your face. Cover your embarrassment.
No, I want to throw you curveballs. I'm going to catch you off guard. I didn't want to suck.
So Joker and his character's name is Arthur Fleck, right? And Arthur is once again a stand-up comedian who has never really tried stand-up, but works as a clown who is also not very successful as a clown. He also is shown to experience delusions of grandeur, or just imagining shit. He lives with his mom, who he takes care of. He has fantasies, much like Rupert Pupkin. He has fantasies about befriending, what's his name? Murray something. Alan? I don't know. Other Jason's gonna look it up.
Sorry. Murray Franklin.
Murray Franklin. There we go. Murray Franklin, who is a successful comedian and talk show host, much like Jerry Langford. Only this time, Murray Franklin is played by Robert De Niro. So
he's graduated.
He's in both movies, and interesting. I don't know if you heard this, but De Niro said he considers this movie to be a sequel for his character from The King of Comedy. So in his mind, all that stuff that happened at the end of King of Comedy would have been real.
You know, and I can totally see that. Even with his body language, he has that kind of corny, the corny little mouth features, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He looks like, because Rupert Pupkin had this sort of strange innocence to him, simpleness, and he kind of has that, but now with a mean-spirited, cynical kind of humor to him as well. So I can see that.
No, absolutely. And I don't know, Arthur Fleck goes through a lot of revelations in this movie. He loses his job, he loses his mom, he gains and then loses a father. Father.
Yeah, right.
The father being, Thomas Wayne.
It's full spoilers, huh?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, we talk awesome. About whatever we want.
I love it.
Good. I don't know. I feel like you should know. If you haven't seen the movie, you shouldn't listen to the show.
No, it's good.
So, yeah. And then it culminates in Arthur does a stand-up set, which is pretty bad. Right? Yeah. Pretty bad.
I'd say so.
I mean, in his head, it's pretty good, but once they play it back, it's not well received. And De Niro's character gets a... What was his name? Murray Franklin. Mm-hmm. Gets a copy of the video, plays it on a show, and they just kind of make fun of him.
And all this, the making fun of him, he gets to see in the hospital tending to his mother, who has
dying
just had
mother.
A stroke.
Yeah.
And just after being questioned by the police.
Mm-hmm.
So, about as low as you can get.
And so he commits a couple of murders, and then he starts a clown revolution. People are dressing up like clowns, and I mean, he doesn't do it on purpose, but...
I don't think he didn't start it.
No, the media did.
If you think about it, Thomas Wayne started it because he referred to him as long as these poor people or these people beneath us keep acting that way, then the people in our status or what have you, I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. are going to just see them as nothing but clowns.
Yep, that's true. He created his own monsters. So, then the Murray Franklin's people reach out to Arthur, who agrees to appear on the show, but he wants to be introduced as Joker. And he dresses up like a clown. And it's implied that... Oh, not implied. I would say it's almost stated that he's going to kill himself on the show. Or he plans on killing himself on the show. But instead, when the actual show comes, he gives a really intense speech about what it's like to be mentally ill. What it's like to... be on the lower end of the financial and economic totem pole. And does a lot of slow motion dancing, which is a very important plot point to the movie. And then he shoots Murray.
After one of the scariest sentences, I think. I haven't seen it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that sentence alone, I don't know about the rest of the movie and all this incel talk and all of the controversies, but that sentence alone is something that is deserving of the controversy, I think, that this movie's creating right now. Personally.
Do you want to say what the sentence is?
Knock, knock. Or you want to hear a joke like, blah, blah, blah. What do you get when you cross a mentally ill loner with a society who abandons or who treats him, who is cast out by society and treated like trash? I'll tell you what you get what you fucking deserve.
Yep.
Shoots him right in the face.
Yep.
And up to this point, you really are, unfortunately, is it just because of Joaquin Phoenix's performance? I'm not sure, but you really are. You do find yourself sympathizing with this maniac, this guy who's very mentally unstable. And
real quick, I just want to say, the other people that he kills up until this point arguably have wronged him in a major way.
Well, the first three killings are
self-defense, yeah. I mean, completely. You could argue the guy that runs away that he tracks down and shoots, that's murder.
A little bit of murder.
But then he also kills a coworker who comes over, but his coworker is kind of a dick to him and also is the one that gives him a gun that gets him fired from his job. Yeah. So, and the reason that he's coming over to visit him is because he wants to make sure that he's not getting in trouble for the killings that happened. And then he kills his mom, who lied to him about being his mom.
Some interesting theories I've read on that one.
Yeah.
But yes. Now, does he kill the neighbor?
Yeah, that was a question that I asked Caitlin on our drive home. I personally think that he did. What do you think?
I don't know. And I love that. I love a movie. I like that it really does. I think he had to have, because there was a certain amount of time between then and whenever else. There was
in the rest of the movie.
Yeah, and then there was also, you know, you see police sirens actually after he does that and he's freaking out in his own apartment. There are police sirens that go by, but then again, Gotham's in turmoil.
Yep.
Gotham's
on fire.
And full of garbage. And let's
full
let's
of rats.
Yeah, let's be straight here. Gotham is just New York. Gotham is New York because if you look at it throughout the late 70s and 80s, there were a ton of sanitation worker strikes in New York and going through the exact same thing that this is just Scorsese's New York. It really is. And by the movie, how beautifully shot was that movie?
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
The set design, the costumes, it looked authentic.
Good.
I thought.
No, I agree. All right, so he kills Murray Franklin. And then just kind of stands there until the cops show up and arrest him. And then he's arrested and there's like a riot going on. And the rioters break him out of the police car only for him to get arrested again and wind up in Arkham. And where it's... once again, heavily implied that he kills the therapist who's interviewing him, and then he just kind of runs around the asylum.
There's so many, and I've read a few things. How much did his therapist at the end there look like his therapist from earlier in the movie?
Mm-hmm. I think they were the same person.
Not the same actress, I don't think.
No.
So, I'm just wondering how much of the movie was really real.
Yeah.
you know, how much of it was just a joke. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like that for being a DC movie done by Warner Brothers, a huge movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fucking art house flick.
Yeah, it is.
You don't get that much slow-mo dancing in a mainstream flick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot of slow-mo dancing.
There is a lot of slow-mo dancing.
A lot of grime, too.
A lot of sending the clowns and a lot of that's life.
Mm-hmm. Do you think do you think there's even a chance that he actually was Thomas Wayne's kid?
I don't know.
Now, here's a cool little fact. The boy who plays Bruce Wayne in this movie,
mm-hmm.
Played a young Joaquin Phoenix in the movie You Were Never Really Here.
Really?
Yes.
That's cool.
So he already has played a young...
So that was why he was so comfortable with him sticking his thumbs in his mouth.
Yeah, they were buddies. From another violent past.
They're bros.
Bro doodlies.
All right, let's talk about... All right, so... As far as I know, you were fairly familiar with the King of Comedy before we did this.
I watched it very closely because I wanted to meet your level of awesomeness.
All right,
I want to be good for you.
I'm also a huge fan of King of Comedy. Did it hold up for you on this viewing? Like, are you still a fan of it?
I think it's the type of movie that it's just gonna get better with time.
Agreed.
I think revisiting some of Scorsese's humor. You look at that and then you look at Wolf of Wall Street now, mm-hmm. and they're very different movies, but he has a really great sense of humor that's just very dark and it's very adult. And back then, you know, he came out with, that was well before Goodfellas, but after Taxi Driver and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
you're not gonna watch it a Scorsese flick and be like, I'm ready to laugh. You know, De Niro laughing, wow. So I can understand why it wasn't received properly, but watching it now, it's even better.
I also don't think, you know, I think that internet culture has made it a much more applicable movie to our life.
That's a good
point.
To
how, you know, reality TV and everything. I mean, that...
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it makes it much more more relevant for our world today. But yeah, no, I'm also a huge fan of that. I don't know that there's a single Martin Scorsese film that I don't love in some way, shape, or form.
Any other... Now, obviously, there's a lot of other influencers on this movie. I mean, influencers is like... I mean, you got the guns to the temple mm-hmm. references three times throughout with Taxi Driver, not to mention a lot of other just stuff pulled straight from that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two main ones, but is there any other movies you saw inspiring or influencing this movie quite a lot?
I know that they've mentioned a couple other directors that they I don't know, borrowed stuff from, I guess.
It's like Tarantino with their borrowing.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna borrow this because I like it. Yeah. And by borrow, I mean I'm going to lift it directly in terms of how it's shot and probably its dialogue.
Pretty goddamn close, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, probably. I haven't had quite as long to gestate and digest this film. So off the bat, I don't really have anything... but
I think there's one visually that stuck out to me mm-hmm. ever since the first trailer dropped, and I haven't had a chance to rewatch it, but The Machinist.
Oh yeah,
Christian Bale.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain just the way, not maybe not the story, besides like an unreliable narrator,
mm-hmm.
but the visuals and the way it's shot, I can see a lot of stuff from that.
The way that they portray Joaquin Phoenix's body.
Yeah.
And the way that they portray Christian Bale's body. I mean, they're both incredibly skinny and it's rough to look at.
It really is. I don't think it's a question of if he gets nominated, right?
No.
right? He goes through so many emotions in, well, at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean,
there's also something we haven't mentioned, which is that he suffers from a some kind of disorder that makes him just kind of start laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I'd say that's fairly integral to the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's what sets his comedy. I mean, or that's what, maybe not what sets, but like that's one of the things that duds his comedy performance.
His comedy performance, his first interview with his therapist starts with that. Mm-hmm. What eggs the muggers who he ends up killing. Mm-hmm. It starts that. I mean,
it does.
And by the end, he really kind of just owns it. And it's almost like the laugh grows with him. Mm-hmm. That was
pretty, you know, cool. The one thing about this film that I really wanted to mention. Did you happen to notice that at the end of the movie when he's standing on top of the cop car and all the dudes are like chanting, and a bunch of them are like raising crowbars and hammers and stuff, and one person is holding up a wicker chair.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I don't know
if you noticed that. No, dude. That was the weirdest fucking thing.
No, that's a good weapon, though.
They pan by him a couple of times, and he's got this chair. It felt like something out of Hot Rod.
That's badass. Like,
and he's just like, oh yeah, I got this chair.
Well, if you're going into a riot, man, you gotta have a wicker chair. Somebody, you know.
It's integral to the riot. Every riot that I've been in, there's always been a wicker chair.
Right? I can't count as many riots as I've
been. That might be because we always riot at furniture stores, but.
Yep. And you just end up in the patio section.
Yeah. Not by choice, but. Just because.
No, that's good. I will look for that. Because I'm definitely going to have to see it again. I can see that. I mean, oh, can I tell you a little tidbit from the first time I saw it?
Yeah.
So I went to see
it. Somebody get a sex act.
No sex acts. Thankfully. But all right, so I'm in the theater, right? And I buy a single ticket, and I'm like, I just got it for the late showing. My leg was all swollen, so I had it propped up. It was that, I sent you a picture. My leg was in rough shape, dude. And yeah. I was running a fever and shit. Mm-hmm. And so I buy a single ticket, just me, and I get there and I think, okay, I'm golden, nobody's gonna sit because these things are in pairs. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, another single person sits next to me. Now, as we're leaving, there's a moment when we're walking out the doors next to each other. Mm-hmm. And he has that line, mentally ill loner, you get what you fucking deserve. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like this, oh fuck, I'm by myself at this goddamn movie. I'm that loner dude here. And it was almost like feeling guilty for something you didn't do. Like, dude, I'm good, man. I'm not like that. Yeah. Like, but it's very strange going to that movie alone because you don't want to be seen that way.
That's understandable.
Just for real, dude, it was awkward. It really fucking was. Can you, so what do you think, man? Have you seen War Dogs?
I have seen War Dogs.
Was this movie something that you saw coming out of Todd Phillips? seeing his evolution from Hangover to War Dogs to this? Because I haven't seen War Dogs yet, so I'm jumping straight from Hangover to this, which is jarring, to say the least.
It's understandable. Not really. I mean, I liked War Dogs, to be clear. Like, I like most of Todd Phillips' movies. I don't think that they are as good as they should be. I think that a lot of times he gets really incredible actors to work with. I think that the ideas he comes up with, I mean, I think Old School is a great example of a movie that has a great premise, has a great cast, and is okay.
Yeah. that cast was, I'm sorry, I was thinking of something else. That cast was great though, and he caught them all before they were massive.
Yeah.
So like that was a perfect cast.
I mean, same thing with The Hangover. I mean, that was the movie that made Zach Galifianakis, you know, Zach Galifianakis. Yeah, that was Bradley the movie. Cooper too. Yeah, and that was the movie that put them in everything for the next couple years.
Yeah, before that, Bradley Cooper was just the asshole tackling people in Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
Sack.
And that was one of the reasons that I was kind of nervous about this, was just because, I mean, like I said, I enjoy The Hangover. I enjoy Old School. I enjoy War Dogs. I enjoy a bunch of the other stuff that he's done. I don't think that it stands up to what it should be. And so I was really nervous about this because, I mean, it had a really great cast. I really like Robert De Niro. I really like... let me rephrase. I really like Robert De Niro when he has stuff to do.
I like when he gives a shit about what he's doing.
Exactly. I like Joaquin Phoenix. I was excited for this movie, but I was also very hesitant just because of the other Todd Phillips movies. I don't think that War Dogs shows... because War Dogs is for all of its faults and everything that it tries to do, it is very much still a comedy first.
Okay. I had hoped he went a little bit...
It's definitely more dramatic than his other films. Up until now, but it is definitely a comedy first and a drama, or a biopic, I guess, second.
Gotcha.
It's once again, it's an interesting concept, great idea, great cast. Jonah Hill and Miles Teller are great. There's one really, really good scene in the movie where Jonah Hill goes to visit his weed dealer, and he's not home, and some random dude sitting on a bench with a bunch of guys is like, "Oh, hey, he's not home, but if you come over here, I'll sell you some weed." And so Jonah Hill walks over and gives him like $200, and then the guy just pretends he's not there. Right. Yeah, and then he goes to it, and the guy's like, "What are you doing here? Yeah, you didn't give me any money. Go away." And Jonah Hill goes to his car and comes back with a submachine gun and just starts firing it off in the air.
That's so badass.
Which is pretty fucking funny. That scene's really great, but then, like, I don't know, rest of the movie, it's okay.
It's reading up on Todd Phillips, because I wanted to be kind of informed again for this. I didn't want to let you down, buddy. It sounded like he was slightly inspired by Scorsese a little bit on that one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, and this is what I was thinking about a second ago, Old School, obviously, what are your influences? You got Animal House, you got your Revenge of the Nerds, you got your classic 80s comedies, 70s comedies. Hangover, do you think is he a thief? Is he like Tarantino? Is he steal from the people you love kind of thing?
I don't...
Or does he have a big enough resume to even... Because he doesn't have, like, a style, does he?
No, there's no movie that I think you could watch and be like, oh, I'm watching a Todd Phillips movie. And I don't think that he has any trademarks in that sense. But I do think that, I think you're right. I think that he does take a lot of stuff in terms of the plots. However, I don't know. Tarantino straight up lifts dialogue and shots from movies that he loves.
You can get away with it, though.
Yeah, and Todd Phillips, I feel like, takes more, like, big picture stuff. And I feel like he draws on a wider scale. And I don't know. I feel like this is... I mean, even though it takes a lot of stuff from The King of Comedy, which I guess we can start getting into. I mean, we were both a fan of King of Comedy. We were both fans of Joker. I feel like, you know... I feel like this, even though it probably has the most stuff taken from other movies...
Oh, easily.
...that it's probably my favorite of all of his films. I know that a lot when The Hangover came out and everybody was freaking out about it, I was the one person that I knew that was like, why is everybody freaking out about this movie?
You knew me.
Yeah, were you not a fan of it either?
It's not that I wasn't a fan, but it was, I mean, it was like, okay. What's the big deal?
Yeah, right?
It's funny.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was entertaining, but...
It's like, shut the fuck up, though, and quit wearing your Walmart t-shirts with a baby on the front of you. It's stupid.
Dude, that was one of the reasons that I knew Caitlin was the one, was she also didn't like The Hangover, or she also wasn't, you know, batshit insane over The Hangover movies. I still see people with stickers of the baby wearing the glasses on people's cars.
Right. I wish they would have went the dark route for the third one. Todd Phillips wanted to get really dark with his career after the second Hangover. He was, from what I read, he wanted to change things up completely. He wanted them to start at Ed Helms's, he wanted to start at the one who had gotten married in his funeral.
Oh.
He wanted him to be dead, and then they were going to go back and see how he died. And that was going to be the weekend that they fucking adventured.
I mean, I'm going to be honest, I don't think that would have been a very good movie, but I would love to have seen it.
I would have loved to see how dark they could have gotten, honestly. But
oh well.
So I'm looking here. I'm very impressed to see that Todd Phillips did write Joker, though. Was one of the two writers on that. So
awesome.
I'm kind of excited to see where his career goes from here. Wonder if he's gonna turn into something, at least something.
Yeah.
Hopefully good.
Maybe it just took him a while to figure out what he, you know. I mean, look at, you know, Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling, Matthew McConaughey all did a bunch of rom-coms until people realized that they were talented. And now they're doing shit. I mean, maybe...
Reynolds needs to get back to doing shit. I'm sorry. He needs to drop... I will be the first one to say it. I love Deadpool, the character, but he needs to stop just being Deadpool. And Deadpool needs to stop being Ryan Reynolds.
He did... oh, my Lord. Did you see Mississippi Grind?
Wanted to. Ben Mendelsohn, right?
Yeah. He's not just Ryan Reynolds in that movie. He's acting.
That's good, because he's an awesome actor.
Yeah, he is. He's great. He's really talented. But I don't know. Yeah, maybe this film is Todd Phillips figuring out that he can do more than just, I don't know, gross out comedies.
Love to see it. It'd be great.
All right. So let's talk about the two. Let's talk about how they, other than the basic plot points, how they influence each other. I mean, both feature unreliable narrators. As you've pointed out, one of the things that I love is that they both end with putting major plot points in doubt as to whether or not they ever happened.
Yeah. And this one, almost the entire film. I mean, you could argue that the entire film didn't happen.
Yeah, and that's a really brave thing to do. especially, you know, movie this size.
Dealing with one of the most beloved comic book characters of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, now, in terms of, I guess I have a question, which is, do you think that there would be a Thomas Wayne type character in The King of Comedy? Does anybody stand out to you?
The only thing that I could think of or point to in that regard would either be just the executives, him going back to their office and over and shooting him down. Without Langford directly shooting him down, because they're the foil in the middle of the movie in the same way that Wayne is the foil in the middle of this movie. They're also the people who are creating this society or this kind of climate that the movie takes place in, which is the climate of celebrity. So in that regard, in Joker, Wayne is, you know, creating the society of rich, elitist, privileged, whatever. So I'd say the executives would come down to it if there had to be one, you know.
No, that makes sense. I agree. I also think that, I think another parallel, I think it's interesting that both De Niro's character in or Franklin Murray, and Jerry Langford both create their enemies, I guess. I don't know what else to call them. They both create their undoing, maybe would be a better word. Because Langford tells Pupkin that he will, you know, he'd love to see his stuff. He wants to have him on the show. And De Niro shows that tape of, or Murray shows that tape of Arthur bombing and then invites him onto the show.
I think that's much truer with De Niro's character in Joker, Murray. I think his mean-spirited humor is a throwback to that William Hung guy, American Idol,
yep.
Sung terribly. I think him belittling Arthur's character is much more attack-driven and creating the enemy, or his enemy, creating Joker. Whereas Jerry Langford even says when he's being held hostage, like, I'm just a human just like you. I have to deal with all the same things you do. And how are you how's a normal human being, even if you're famous, supposed to deal with fanatics like Pumpkin? So I think he did create Pumpkin in a way. But that guy was obsessive beforehand. I mean, he had been going to standing outside that door night after night, as Sandra Bernhardt brought up, just as much. So, to a lesser degree, I think Jerry Langford did. But yeah, it is interesting that they both did do that.
Yeah, they both set in motion the events that would. I mean, De Niro died, but
a little bit.
maybe. Depending on your interpretation of the movie. You know, I'm kind of bummed now. I really wish that the lifting the clown makeup would have been from King of Comedy as well.
The what?
I would have loved to see. I just said I'm kind of bummed now that, you know, the clown makeup, that wasn't lifted from King of Comedy 2. That would have been really funny to see De Niro wearing clown makeup and dressed up like a clown.
It would have. Both.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of similarities between the two, and I think that they work really well together. And I think that the idea that Joker is a sequel to, or in De Niro's mind, Joker is a sequel to The King of Comedy, is a really fascinating idea to explore, and adds a whole new layer to. De Niro's character. All right, I don't know. I don't know that I have much more to say about these two flicks at this time. So, if you're happy with where we're at, we're gonna get into some movie news, and I am gonna pass out because I am tired. No, I'm just kidding. I'm gonna let Jason Thompson. Give us a healthy dosage of what's going on in the world of film.
All right, man. So I read a lot of movie news, so I got movie news here.
All right.
Most of this I've gotten from Slash Film, my personal favorite movie news website. Highly recommend it. One Rolling Stone's movie news to site of the year, like 10 years back. So that's still up to date. Alex Garland discussed devs at the New York Comic Con here recently and premiered the new teaser trailer, if you want to call it that. It was one of those artistic, like, 15 to 20 second things. It's going to be coming out on FX, and it sounds like it's going to be a one-off season, so FX will probably sign it for 10 more. Because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But any news about a new Alex Garland thing is always good news in my book. So excited to hear anything about that. Didn't catch a premiere date or anything.
Which one do you like more, Annihilation or Ex Machina?
As a huge and massive fan of Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach trilogy, I will say Ex Machina.
Alright.
Disney is apparently doing a new live-action Inspector Gadget I really hope they bring Matthew Broderick back for this. Because I don't think French Stewart really held up in the sequel, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say. Yeah, I'm bringing it back.
If you could cast someone as Inspector Gadget, who would you pick?
Well, Ryan Gosling for anything, right? Isn't that the answer for anything, him or Tom Hardy?
That is a good answer.
No, but in all seriousness, I would have to dwell on that for a moment.
I would pick Frankie Muniz.
I wish you all wanted to see the look.
You know, visual humor is a great thing for an audio medium.
Oh, God.
So I just wanted to see the look on your face.
Jesus Christ. Terrible. The Hunger Games prequel novel Ballad of Birds and Snakes is coming out soon because money. I assume that this is mostly due to the fact that J.K. Rowling's Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movies have made tons of money, if not made anyone happy. So
to say, despite not being very good.
Yes, yes.
Ugh.
So you can all expect that in your near future, I'm sure. And then earlier this week, reviews started dropping on Lucy in the Sky. That's Natalie Portman's new lead movie that she's getting a lot of acclaim for her role in it. Although most of the reviews for the movie have been overall poor, which is I'm really surprised by, because Noah Hawley is one of my favorite writers right now. Does Fargo on FX along with the totally underrated Legion. And so I was really, really highly anticipating this movie, and I hope that these critics that have seen it and reviewed it are just idiots. So fingers crossed that Natalie Portman is out doing something great again, and can't really go wrong with old John Hamm on the side, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Stevens. Sorry.
Oh, dude. Did you see Apostle?
Yeah.
Dude, Apostle is so fucking good.
Yeah.
The Guest? Did you see The Guest?
Underwhelmed.
You didn't like The Guest?
Didn't.
Dude, I love...
I kind
of... That's one of those movies that I can watch over and over and over again.
Should I watch it again? Should I give it another try?
I highly recommend it. It's on Vudu.
Oh, all
right. There you go.
I will check that out again.
It's solid, dude. It's great. I loved it. I did look up. I was curious because I was just interested to see what other people thought that he was, which... I guess spoilers for The Guest, but Dan Stevens is some sort of, I don't know, robot, cyborg, alien thing. I don't know.
No, he wasn't. He was just a guy being hunted, I thought.
No, he wasn't.
The fuck? He's just hunting that chick down at the end.
He's got, like, superpowers. He gets, like, shot and stabbed multiple times and is up moving immediately. And then just his delayed reactions to things, like when the girl's making out with him, and she's like, you don't really seem into this, and he's like, au contraire, and then immediately is like into it. There's a line that kind of explains it when Lance Reddick shows up, and he's like, hey, due to his, I don't think he uses the word programming, but it's something like programming. He says that he does whatever people want him to do. Like, that's his setting.
Okay.
Or due to these experiments, like, his setting is that whatever somebody wants, he goes through any length to accomplish that.
I remember this now.
Yeah, and that the reason he starts killing everyone at the end is because once he gets found out, that's his protocol, is to immediately just start killing everyone.
See, all right, I do... This is all coming back to me. Yeah. It's been a while. And yeah. I do just seem to remember him being brainwashed.
Yeah.
Not being like a cyborg alien.
But he... Okay, I'm not going to lie. The alien part is pretty heavy speculation. But no, at the end of the movie, he gets, like, shot in the face.
Yeah, he keeps moving, huh?
And then is immediately up and moving, like, minutes later. And it even ends with that great moment. I don't remember the actress's name, but I love her, and I think she's amazing.
She's Micah Monroe. Micah. She's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, she's great.
It ends with that look on her face when she says, "What the fuck?" And then it just credits.
That's awesome.
I
gotta say, Dan Stevens is an attractive looking man in this movie. Look at that. Jesus Christ. That guy.
He is. Yeah, no, he is. But anyway, I got curious because I wanted to know. I was just wondering, like, if they had dropped any, like, if anybody had picked up on any weird, obscure lines that, like, maybe I had missed. And if they delved into what he was at all, which, sorry, this has turned into a show about the guest, but too bad.
Right?
This is our fucking show, so deal with it.
You like movies.
And, there's this, so I got curious and I looked it up, and apparently there was actually, like, a whole scene of exposition where they explained where he came from, what happened to him, why he was the way that he was, and it tested so poorly with audience members that they just cut it out and didn't replace it with anything.
I'm kind of surprised because Adam Wingard seems like the type that he does all these indie flicks and everything. He seems like the type that would be happy with just not explaining anything.
I know. I wonder if that was a studio. Like, I wonder if that was the way it was originally, and then like a studio note was like, you got to put.
Yeah.
Some sort of explanation, and so he was just like, he's a robot.
I could see that.
And then everybody was like, well, that's not a very good explanation.
That's fucking stupid.
And so they cut it out and just didn't replace it with anything.
God. 5 million made. Interesting.
But yeah. So, I don't know. I guess we can just get straight into kind of plugs and recommendations. I really, really enjoy The Guest and recommend that you check it out. A couple other just random things that I've been watching / reading / listening to lately. I've been listening a lot to the album This Land by Gary Clark Jr., which relates back to film because he is in the movie Chef. He's the blues musician when they go to New Orleans. Texas. It's when they go to Texas. He's the rock musician, and he is really, really good. And if you have not heard This Land, a lot of people have been comparing it to be like a rock and roll version of, or a blues rock version of Childish Gambino's This Is America.
Interesting.
So if you're a fan of that content, you should check out This Land. I rewatched the movie Brick for the first time in a long time. And I know you've got a hardcore boner for that film.
The hardest.
And that was, I think, you know, I don't want to make you feel sad, but I think your boner for it is one of the reasons I wasn't crazy about it the first time I watched it. And
sorry.
No, it's okay.
Talk
to you. I know that I do that too. I mean, we were just talking about Predestination. I love that movie and I talk it up all the time.
I like it.
And what's that?
No, I'm not going to like it.
Yeah, exactly. And, I just watched it again recently and I forgot, you know, just how good that film is. I've been reading the Adventure Zone Volume 2. Their comic has come out. Something Express. And if you're not familiar with the Adventure Zone, it's a podcast where, three brothers and their dad played Dungeons and Dragons together. And they have been turning it into a comic book, which is really fun to read. And then finally, I finished reading The Handmaid's Tale, which is very exciting for my wife because now I'm finally going to watch the TV show, which I've been refusing to watch until I read the book. So those are the things that I have been into lately. What do you got?
I have been binge watching Peter Gunn. From 1958 to 1960, it's a black and white private detective show. Jason brought up that sounds a lot like Archer Dreamland, and from all the visuals I saw from Dreamland, it looks like Dreamland was completely ripping that off in the best Archer way possible. I mean that with respect.
Oh yeah.
Love that. Coolest cat in the world. And then I've been reading Ryu Murakami's In the Miso Soup, which is being optioned for to be made into a movie coming up here. It's a pretty dark Asian thriller, and got me excited as obviously I like to read books before they're made into movies, and the fact that Willem Dafoe might be playing the serial killer in Japan, in the seedy underworld of Sex Club Japan.
Delightful.
Yes, it's amazing. So,
all right. Well, I'd like to quickly plug my Twitter, which I know we've discussed multiple times on the show, and I cannot for the life of me ever remember what it is. I believe it's Jason Ranks Things, or Jason Ranks Stuff, or Jason Ranks Crap. It's one of those three.
Wow.
I can never remember what it is. That's a great plug. I'm pretty sure it's Jason Ranks Stuff.
They're still listening after that, I'm sure.
Yeah, right? So, yeah. I believe...
Sorry.
This is a professionally done show.
Dude, super pro.
Yeah, and I believe you had a Instagram you would like to tell people to find you at.
Yeah, I got a little Instagram. It's just GonzoThompson48. All one word and numbers connected on Instagram. So
there we go.
There you go. I'm there.
All right, and then you can follow the show on Twitter at The Outer Frame, which Donnie mostly manages. You can follow the show on Instagram, which my lovely wife Caitlin mostly does not manage right now, but when she does, she manages it. And then finally, you can follow the show on Facebook, which I run, and that's probably the best way. That's probably the best thing to follow.
You do a pretty good job out there.
Oh, thank you. I try. I've been trying the last, about, I don't know, I think like the last 2 months, I've genuinely been giving it a go.
You've been doing a good post on there. I look at it as much as I can.
I'm glad. I try to do one thing a day, so that's my goal. All right. So thank you so much for listening to the show. If you've made it this far, greatly appreciate it. Please tell your dumb friends about the show so that they can listen to it. And to say what has become our new ending line, because this show's gotten kind of fucking weird since we did Lords of Chaos. Hail Satan and have a great evening.
That's awesome.
Goodbye.
This is the best closing line I've ever heard, man. This is awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye.